Our power verse, 1 John 2, verse 6, says that anyone who says he is a Christian should live as Christ. And the way that we live this life out, the way that we have influence on each other, the way that we learn our identity, isn't done alone. It is done in connection with people. And these first 3 weeks of January 2014, what we've been talking about may not seem mind-blowing, but it's so incredibly essential for getting everything else. We've spoken that Jesus lived in consistent contact with his Father. He kept paying attention to God. That is living by faith. It's not living by rules or religion. It's not what so often we think church is trying to put us into, but the idea is we're living this life because we are in connection with our Father. We're attentive. As 1 Thessalonians 5:17 says, pray all the time. Not only our Father, but Jesus was anointed by the Spirit. He was given power by the Spirit. He was led by the Spirit. We're told all those things, and we're admonished to do the same in Ephesians 5:18. And then Jesus accepted human help, other people. Galatians 6:2 tells us that we should carry each other's burdens and so live out the law of Christ. That the way that Christ lived would be fulfilled in this, by us carrying each other's burdens. These three things, though they may not be the most mind-blowing sermons you've ever heard, are so essential. And if you try to live the rest of this year like Jesus without being attentive to God, without having the Spirit filling you, without the help of other people, you will fail in it. You won't do it the right way. These are so essential. So keep those, hopefully, in mind throughout the year, that we don't do this alone. We're not lone rangers. We don't do this solo, but we have to do this together. I was reading a book a couple months back by a guy named Kyle Eidelman, and the book is titled Not a Fan. His main premise is this. There are a lot of people who are fans of Jesus, and there are some people who are followers of Jesus. Jesus has called us to follow him, not just to be a fan. Not just to be someone who says, yay, Jesus, I love Jesus, but then not live it out. Some of the things he says are fans are happy to follow Jesus as long as it doesn't require any significant changes or have any negative influence on their life. As long as, oh, Jesus is saying what I want him to say, then I follow Jesus. As long as it helps me get what I want, then I follow Jesus. But if there's a change that I have to make on my side, then we get less concerned about it. We're afraid of him interfering with our life. And the biblical idea of belief means it will change your life. It's not just what you say with your mouth. It's not just saying, I believe because I have mentally agreed to it. Belief has such a stronger meaning behind it. And the gospel doesn't allow for us to divorce belief and our action. There's tons of examples in the Bible of people who backed up what they said, who considered what the price was and followed through. But who is our main example? Jesus. Awesome. So let's start with Jesus. I could give you many other examples, but I figured let's look at Jesus. Jesus considered the cost. Jesus, in his life, he wasn't just living and walking through kind of haphazardly, but he knew what some of the costs would be upon his life. Philippians 2 gives one of the most interesting pictures of Jesus to me outside of the biographies of Jesus that we have, somewhat because it starts even before the biography of when Jesus is born on earth. In one translation by J.B. Phillips, it says this, "Let Christ himself be your example as to what your attitude should be. For he who had always been God by nature did not cling to his prerogatives as God's equal, but stripped himself of all privilege by consenting to be a slave by nature and being born as a mortal man. And having become man, he humbled himself by living a life of utter obedience, even to the extent of dying. And the death he died was the death of a common criminal." We're later told, because of his willingness to do this, God has exalted him so that every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus is Lord because of the actions that he's done. And after that, it says, therefore, because of what Jesus has done, do not complain and do not argue, which we'll come back later. Just store that in your head. But we'll look at some of these pieces. The first ones, verses 5 and 6, in another translation says it this way. Although Jesus was the form of God and equal with God, he didn't take advantage of that equality. this is, to me, one of the craziest parts of the Bible ever. Because you have Jesus, equal with God, that says, I will make myself nothing. I will strip myself. I will empty myself and come and live as a human. This is one of those mysteries that as a human, I cannot understand how that works. I cannot say, I will strip myself of being a human and be a frog and live as a frog and yet have this humanity inside of me. I have no idea how Jesus could do this. It is an incredible mystery, but something that I go, this is mind-blowing, that someone who is God, who has all of the comfort that being God could come with, all of the power that being God could come with, and he says, I will make myself nothing, and I will take the form of a slave. I'll take the form of a human. One part of your identity, and this is not honestly a negative thing, although we often look at it, is that as humans, we are slaves. Maybe you've heard the saying, you're going to serve somebody. It may be the devil, it may be the Lord, but you're going to serve somebody. I've known so many humans who thought that they were in control of everything. And they said, I am my own master. Until they try to stop doing some action and find out they're actually addicted. Or until this one person that they thought always loved them goes away and they can't restore the relationship. Or until things start spiraling out of control and they don't know how to handle their life. People feel like they're their own master until they lose control and realize they're not as much the master as they thought. Jesus chose to become a slave. And this is against the way that we normally think often in among Christian circles even, to start with this idea that we are slaves to God, not in a way that he is harsh to us, but in a way that is we are servants to him. Jesus is spoken of like this here. Peter calls himself that. Paul calls himself that. Paul calls Timothy that. James, Jude. If you look through the New Testament writers, almost each one says, they call themselves, I am a bondslave of Christ. They don't start with, I am a Christian even. They start with, I am a bondslave of Christ. And Jesus came and lived this out in front of us. Why are they saying that? Because they're following the example of Jesus, that he gave up everything. He knew what he had to give up. He wasn't surprised by this. He knew the difficulty that it would be. He understood what his sacrifice would be. A slave doesn't get to negotiate, but Jesus understood the sacrifice. Verses 7 and 8, it says, Jesus became human and he stayed human. See, that's the thing. Jesus didn't walk into this and go, I'm going to come down to earth and see if I like it, and if it's not working out for me, I'm going to give up on this. He started it and he stuck with it. Through the struggles of what being a human would be, he lived it out. And he suffered to the point of being crucified in a very humbling, humiliating kind of way. It was a very bad type of death. And it was also intentionally mean type of death. See, the Romans had various ways of killing people. Crucifixion isn't the only possibility. They also could just chop your head off. That's faster. It's cheaper. It's easier. Just boom, I'm here, you're there, head no longer on top of shoulders. When they wanted to be especially mean to someone, they would crucify them. But that took at least 4 soldiers and a centurion, so it cost them money. They have to go out to the place where it's going to happen, so it cost them time. It cost more effort to kill Jesus this way. And Jesus knew that that was the type of death he was going to die. Jesus wasn't going to take the easy road. And for those who like theological kind of things, there's also this idea that there are Christophanies. What that means is that in the Old Testament, it's a picture of Jesus already kind of walking on earth. Some people think that the fourth man in the fire with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego is a Christophany, a picture of Jesus already. Or the man who struggles with Jacob, some of these. The important point is not that. The important point is this. Jesus did see the damage of earth that he was getting into. He wasn't tricked into this. Like, ooh, you know what, I'm going to go to Earth and everyone's going to like me. I'm going to go to Earth and it's going to be really nice. It'll be like sitting in a mansion and I'm going to get pampered. Jesus understood the sacrifice it would be and was willing to go through with it. And yet he wasn't going to change his mind. John chapter 14, verse 27 and 28, he says, "My heart is troubled, and what shall I say? Shall I say, 'Father, do not let this hour come upon me'? But that's why I came, so that I might go through this hour of suffering." He's talking about, he knows he's going to be crucified. He says, "Shall I say, you know what, how about let's get out of this?" He says, "No, this is the very reason that I came, so I might go through it. Father, bring glory to your name." His concern was not his comfort, it was God's glory. What about you? Do you first seek God's glory in your life, or do you first seek your own comfort? Two verses later, Jesus says that the rule of this world would be overthrown. He's speaking about what his death will do, that his death will throw over what Satan's rule had been. And he said, "When I am lifted up from the earth, I'll draw everyone to me." And in saying this, he indicated the kind of death he was going to suffer. On a cross, you get lifted up. Jesus knew what was coming. And Jesus had already made his decision. Honestly, instead of saying Jesus had made his decision, you should almost scratch out "had made" and just say Jesus stuck with his decision. He wasn't going to give it up. And there were plenty of times where he could have. There were people who tried to tell him, "Jesus, okay, you're talking crazy. You're not going to die. You don't have to do this." One of his closest friends, Peter, said that to him. And Jesus said, "I rebuke you, Satan. Get behind me. You don't have in mind the things of God." See, Jesus had made his decision. He wasn't going to change it. The danger is that so often there are people who make a decision that say, "I want to follow Jesus," but then change it. They say, "I'm not going to follow you there. I'm not going to go that far." But our example is Jesus. He knew what he was getting into. He knew the sacrifice, and he stuck with it. He would not change his mind. In Luke chapter 14, Jesus has these large crowds of people around him. And he starts talking to him. He says, "Anyone who comes to me but refuses to let go of father, mother, spouse, children, brothers, sisters, yes, even one's own self, can't be my disciple. Anyone who won't shoulder his own cross and follow behind me can't be my disciple." See, when Jesus had a big crowd of people, he didn't try to make them happy first. He didn't go, "Ooh, I have a lot of people, I need to make sure that I preach a sermon that no one will get angry about, that will be acceptable across all of these people." Jesus starts with, there are large groups of people, and he says, "You might have to give up your family. You might have to give up your own self and carry your cross and follow me." Which to people at this time, they're not thinking a cross is a necklace. They're not thinking that a cross is like the Red Cross that means that help is coming. They're thinking a cross is a cruel means of torture when the Romans are really mad at you and want to kill you. And Jesus says, "Be willing to do that, to follow me." Now, again, we've gone through this idea that we're not in this alone. So even the same Jesus who said, "Carry your cross and follow me," had someone help him carry his cross. This isn't supposed to be used as a verse to say, "Well, I'm going to do this on my own, and I'm just going to push myself to do it alone." We do this together as a group. But Jesus continues, and he gives two examples of people making major decisions in their lives. He says, "Is there anyone here who, planning to build a new house, doesn't first sit down and figure the cost so you'll know if you can complete it? If you only get the foundation laid and then run out of money, you're going to look pretty foolish. Everyone passing by will poke fun at you. He started something he couldn't finish." He gives another example. "Can you imagine a king going into battle against another king without first deciding whether it's possible with his 10,000 troops to face the 20,000 troops of the other. And if he decides he can't, won't he send an emissary and work out a truce? I haven't bought my own house yet, but I'm pretty sure when I'll do it, I'm going to sit and make sure that I'm going to be able to pay that off. I will consider the cost of what this house is going to be, because I don't want myself, and I certainly don't want my family, my wife, the kids that are coming, I don't want them to be stuck with debt that I'm not able to pay off. I will consider that cost. I've never been a king. I'm told I don't have royal blood and will not be allowed to do so as far as the world is concerned. So I doubt I'm going to lead an army and say, you know what, let's just invade Luxembourg. Let's try it. I think there's more of me than there are of them. Let's try this. But if I were a king, I'm pretty sure that's a big decision. That you go, we're going to walk into a battle. Can I win this? Do we have a chance? Or is this just going to be a senseless slaughter of my people and myself? If you think you're going to lose, you might reconsider how you act. And Jesus has just said, if you want to follow me, take up your cross. Be willing to walk away from whatever else it is. And he says, this is at least the same type of big decision as buying a home. This is at least the same type of big decision as getting into war. It's that level. And sometimes I try to be very cautious with how we invite people to say they want to follow Jesus to become a Christian, because I want people to realize it is a major decision in life. This is not just, okay, you had this emotional feeling, would you raise your hand so that you can be a Christian right now and then walk off and forget it. This is a major decision. Verse 33, he sums it up like this. Simply put, if you're not willing to take what is dearest to you, whether plans or people, and kiss it goodbye, you can't be my disciple. Jesus calls for sacrifice. He does. To say that Jesus was always nice and made people happy is a lie. I was reading an article this morning by someone that I disagreed with them in part, because they seemed to say that, oh, well, I really like Jesus and he's always nice to people, but I'm concerned about the church because they ask a lot from you. And I go, Jesus asked much more than I ever did of anyone. He offers much more than I can. So I think he has a reason to do it. But Jesus calls for sacrifice. And he asks people, are you really listening to me? And often people walked away. You see, there's no comfortable way to carry a cross. There just isn't. No matter how you're going to hold it, no matter how you're going to put it around, it will inconvenience you. And when Jesus says, follow me, carry your cross, it's not always going to be comfortable and convenient. It won't. The biblical reality is that when people say yes to following Jesus, they're agreeing to carry a cross, and that will be painful. Question, if you look at your life, has carrying your cross cost you anything? I can look at my life, I know that it has. It has cost me some, probably will cost me more in the future. But jobs, yeah. Playing sports, yes, at times. A relationship, maybe more than one relationship, yes. Popularity, yes. Getting to be around my family, yes. And I'm sure that there can be story after story of people in this room who tell you, this is what it has cost me to follow Jesus. And I appreciate those stories, because it encourages me to continue to follow Jesus in that way, to be willing to follow Jesus in that way. When I was a teenager, I went to Cambodia on a mission trip, and I remember one of my friends that was on this trip, he's kind of a diehard guy, and we were riding along, I believe on two motorcycles, We were being driven by Cambodian people, and we were both on the back of motorcycles. And I don't remember if we were talking to each other as we were riding or if we waited to stop screaming when we had come to a stop. But he said, you know, when I came here, I kind of had this feeling like I'll probably die on this trip. And I thought, wow. Would I be willing to do that if I knew, if God said, you're going to go on this mission trip and you're going to die? If I really felt like, not just the possibility of it, but I felt like that was going to happen, I might reconsider. He did not die. Or at least, I see that he posts Facebook statuses every now and again, so he's alive. I don't have a lot of interaction with him just because of how our lives have gone. But it stuck in my mind. What are you willing to sacrifice? And it changes a lot of how you think and how you speak. Remember, earlier I said that in Philippians 2, it talks about Jesus being our example. He was willing to strip himself of everything. And then after that, it says, therefore, the way that you should live, do everything without grumbling and complaining, but shine as lights. My friend Jeremy, who had gone to Cambodia on this mission trip, didn't complain about a whole lot. I think because he was expecting to die the whole time. So, you know, what is there to complain about? And I remember speaking with Christine before our Kenya missions trip, that I said, you know what, I want to tell the people going to Kenya this, okay? You have to accept the fact that if you died, this would be worth it. That going on this trip to reach other people's lives would be worth it. The reason why, because if you have already decided my life is not my own, then if you end up getting a ripped muscle in your back while you're on a mission trip, and that makes you have to sit home one or two days, you say, whatever I have is God's and I'm not going to complain about it. If you have a really long day as you're out ministering and you don't get to come back and have lunch and you're feeling dehydrated and then you have to carry big bags of cabbages and rice like 2 kilometers just to make it to where we're going to minister and keep doing that and have to really be willing to give out to people instead of sit down and say, I'm tired and I'm thirsty. If you've already said, I'm willing to die for this, that doesn't seem so bad. If you have to sleep in small quarters and not get the kind of shower that you would hope for every day, you're willing to do it because you've already made that sacrifice. And how many of us in our lives spend our time complaining about things because we haven't already made the decision, whatever comes, I've counted that cost, and my life is not for my comfort, it is for the glory of God. Another book I've been reading is by a guy named Eugene Peterson, and as I read this, I just went, oh, wow, I feel convicted. Where he says, we go out and buy a Bible. We adapt, we edit, we sift, we summarize. We then use whatever seems useful and apply it to our circumstances, however we see fit. So we take charge of the Christian gospel, using it as a toolbox to repair our lives, or as a guidebook for getting what we want, or as an inspirational handbook to enliven a dull day. We take the Bible and we make it kind of whatever we're looking for it to be. Oh, I'm not feeling good today, let me go to the Bible. Instead of saying, whatever day it is, God's word leads me. We find ourselves in the story as followers of Jesus. Jesus calls us to follow him and we obey. Or we don't. Which one are we? Because our task is to obey. Believingly, trustingly, to obey. We don't have to figure everything out. We don't have to even do everything, but we do have to obey what God calls us to. Have you counted the cost in your own life? Have you considered what it might cost you? Or are you still living for your comfort? There was a pastor that had said he was having a conversation with a guy in his church that had said, oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to be leaving the church. And he asked, oh, why? And the man said, you know, whenever I listen to one of your messages, it seems like you're trying to interfere with my life. The pastor said he breathed a big sigh of relief. And I think he just thought it. He didn't say it out loud, but said, well, that's my job description. That's what we're here for. To be like Jesus, who called people to sacrifice. He He lived it out first. He didn't call people to do something he was not already willing to do. He knew what he had before he even came to earth. He knew what he would lose by doing it. But he stuck with his decision. We're giving a challenge this year to the people of this church to try to intentionally be like Jesus. And in, I think, 2 weeks is when we'll make kind of an official call that I would like to see people respond to. But right now, you're just looking at and seeing, what will I do? Because I wanted people first to consider what it might cost them before they just say, oh yeah, well, I'm going to take this challenge. I want you to know what you're getting into. So what I'm asking you to do first is to be reading one biography of Jesus each month that's in the Bible, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Second, that you'd be listening to all of the 52 sermons, whether that's myself or Steve or a guest speaker preaching, but that we're getting this word into us. Third, that you share what you're learning each week, that you will talk with someone about it, with your family, with coworkers, and more than that. And then the fourth one is each week you would get a Jesus life step, something to act out. And so the Jesus life step this week is this. I would like you to at some point sit down with a piece of paper and a pencil, or with a computer and a keypad, or whatever it is that you can actually write out, and consider at least 7 things it might cost you to follow Jesus. To look at your life and go, what would that mean over the next year? If I would really put this into practice, what might it cost me? Might this specific friend at work not want to talk to me if I'm mentioning the name of Jesus? Might it cost me money because I'll be deciding to be generous towards a food package thing so that other people can have it? Might it cause me to move where I'm living? Might it cost me a relationship with a boyfriend or a girlfriend? I don't know what it is for you. You have to consider the cost yourself. But throughout this week, I would ask that you would sit down, and you can make it as long as you want, and it can be shorter than 7 things. It's just a number to give you to actually take time to do it. What would following Jesus cost you?